From Breezewood to Erie, Latrobe to Camp Hill, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, finding qualified employees tops both taxes and regulations as a concern for Pennsylvania's employers. David Taylor is here to host a Capital Watch look at results of the Fall 2019 Keystone Business Climate Survey. And is there anything wrong with how Pennsylvania redraws congressional district lines? On my town hall commentary, I'll explain why the Fair Districts PA plan is anything but fair. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. The Pennsylvania legislature might soon pass limits on the cash value of gifts lawmakers can receive from lobbyists and constituents. Legislation passed out of the House State Government Committee that would prohibit public officers, employees, and candidates for office from accepting a gift of cash in any amount. The same individuals would also be prohibited from accepting any gift that has a fair market value or aggregate cost of more than $50 from any one person in any one year. The proposed law would also place a $500 limit on the value of accepting hospitality, transportation, or lodging in any one calendar year. President Donald Trump will be returning to Pennsylvania on December 10th to hold a campaign rally at the Giant Arena in Hershey. In announcing the visit, the Trump campaign touted the state's booming economy and the fact jobs are returning to Penn's Woods. The president was last in Pennsylvania in October when he was here to address the Shell Insight Conference in Pittsburgh. Pennsylvania is considered to be one of the key battleground states headed into the 2020 presidential election. A state senator from Luzerne County has left the Democrat Party and switched his registration to independent. Senator John Yudichek represents a district that is trending rapidly toward Republicans. The GOP took majority control of the Luzerne County Board of Commissioners in the November election. Yudichek said he will caucus with Senate Republicans, increasing the GOP's majority in that chamber. Yudichek's party switch complicates Democrat efforts to gain control of the Senate, as they would now need to flip 4 seats currently held by Republicans in next year's election in order to do that. And Pennsylvania lawmakers and judges will be getting a raise at the beginning of the year. That's when a 1.9% cost of living increase will take effect. The average salary for a state legislator will be $90,000 per year. The governor's pay will pass the $200,000 mark, making Pennsylvania's chief executive the highest paid in the nation. Judges and justices will also see a hike in pay. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. Despite the uncertainty created by the trade war with China and the upcoming presidential election, Pennsylvania business owners say the economy remains strong. So strong, finding enough qualified employees to fill open jobs is their biggest problem. Our Capital Watch crew is here to look at results of the Fall 2019 Keystone Business Climate Survey. Joining host David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association are Matthew Briette from the Commonwealth Partners and Gordon Denlinger from the National Federation of Independent Business. Dave?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me on the program, Gordon Denlinger, Executive State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business. Gordon, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, David. Great to be here.
And as ever, the magnificent Matt Briette, leader of the Commonwealth Partners Chamber of Entrepreneurs. Matt, thanks for being on the show.
Hey, good to be with you, David.
So our good friends at the Lincoln Institute for Public Opinion Research, one of the very important services that they render to the public is that they do their twice yearly Keystone Business Climate Survey to benchmark by interviewing actual Pennsylvania business owners and C-suite executives, how their businesses are faring, what's happened in the recent past, what they expect to happen in the near future. And our friends at Lincoln Institute have been doing this for, gosh, for decades now. And so it's a really great database of information to track this over time. All that's available online at lincolninstitute.org. But so having just concluded the fall 2019 Keystone Business Climate Survey, Matt, what would you say is the big takeaway?
Well, I think the big takeaway is that, you know, Pennsylvania's economy has cooled a bit, but it remains strong. That people are saying, hey, this is a good business environment in which we're operating. Of course, there's always those on one hand, but on the other hand.
Of course.
And I think one of the biggest things that we see here is the ongoing struggle to find qualified employees. And I hear that, you know, whether I'm in the southeast part of the state or in the western part of the state, finding good employees is something that it doesn't matter what business you're in, people are struggling there. So this to me, of course, then gets into the education, but there's a lot of reasons for that. But I think it should be something that for policymakers, they ought to be looking. How do we make sure that we are providing the opportunities for employees to have the skill set and the opportunities to find those jobs and then fill those jobs?
That's exactly right. And Gordon, this is the findings here of the survey. This is consistent what you're hearing from your members.
Absolutely. The Business Climate Survey is spot on with what we're experiencing, hearing from small business owners all across the Commonwealth, that there's a lot of remaining optimism out there, that talking ourselves into a recession is an agenda-driven point by certain people who would like to accomplish certain political ends, shall we say.
Yes, sir.
But as the climate survey indicates, there remains a lot of optimism. There's a little bit of a pullback, as Matt Briette shared, that business owners are taking a little bit of a breath, but it's not to move into negative territory or into a decline. That beyond that, there's a lot of positive room for growth, and consumers particularly are propelling this. That they're very optimistic about their wage growth, which has happened over time. They're tapping into some consumer credit, some of the home equity as well, but they are powering this expansion forward. Maybe, frankly, a little more than business owners are at this point. Business owners are taking a little bit more cautious note.
So the first question on the fall 2019 Keystone Business Climate Survey was, what is the most significant problem facing your business today? And, you know, as we said, lack of qualified employees at almost 40% was the number one concern, you know, well above what in the past have been the main issues, which is high taxes, in this case below 13%, and excessive regulation, which was less than 19%. With the progress that's been made at the federal level with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act to you know, to get federal business tax rates down to the actually slightly below the average of our international competitors, but then also the White House focus on deregulation and cleaning up the books and getting things you know, cutting the red tape, those things, the positive effects of those have been felt, and as a result, that the workforce issue has just, you know, emerged organically as the number one challenge.
You know, I think that is amazing that nearly 6 out of 10 businesses reported that they have openings, that they're seeking employees, and that almost 7 out of 10 are saying it's really difficult. We can't find enough people to fill these jobs. So this is, I think, the challenge of an education system, frankly, that hasn't served a lot of our kids well to prepare them for the new economy. So I think that that's a policymaker issue that they need to think about. But we also need to, consider, all right, where are these job opportunities being created?
Mm-hmm.
And that should, again, serve some evaluation of what are we doing in our state capitals and particularly in Harrisburg to help fulfill the needs that we see our job creates. Otherwise, we're going to see, you know, our kids continue to go other places, which, of course, is not what I want as a father of four kids.
This workforce readiness challenge is probably the most difficult, most multifaceted challenge facing state government, facing the private economy, because it has so many different dimensions to it. you know, if the listeners aren't aware, the good news is that Pennsylvania is currently at a very, very low official unemployment rate. We're at or below 4%, which is just historically amazing. The bad news is that our workforce participation rate is not that good. And so what that means is that there are a lot of people who are on the sidelines who are either, you know, unable or unwilling to work. And how do we as an economy, as a society, as a commonwealth, how do we help to get those people back into productive life? Pennsylvania's job training and workforce development system is just an absolute spaghetti tangle of mess. That it is, you know, what, $2 billion going through multiple cabinet departments. It's dozens of different programs. It makes no sense at all. I think that there are hundreds of millions of dollars of efficiencies that could come from reinventing that system. And but the first and most important thing we need to do to get there is for Governor Wolf to ask the federal government for permission. And he seems unwilling or unable to do that.
You know, you've highlighted two significant problems there, and that is the need to redirect a lot of our upcoming young people into where the jobs are going to be. And there's so much space in the skilled trades. You know, this idea everybody has to go get the 4-year degree, I think that needs to be left behind. We need to acknowledge, yes, some are best directed there, but so many of our young people could find great opportunities in the skilled trades and family-sustaining jobs when they come out of those educational processes. We need to kind of retune our thinking, and that's starting to happen in Harrisburg with the Wolf administration, with the Republican House and Senate. And we're seeing some redirecting of resources more toward the skilled trades side of the equation. Beyond that, though, something you mentioned earlier, the low participation rate, and I'm going to address that as an aging white male, which I happen to be. Too many in this cohort are sitting on the sidelines, and I think they've become discouraged over time. The ship has sailed. I'm not going to have the opportunity. When really, wow, do we need them to get off of that sofa and get out there and go knock on a few doors? And you know, at a time when nationally, there are more jobs available than there are people to fill them, and I'm sure that's true in Pennsylvania as well. Those doors are open. You know, this is the time. Get out there and you know, maybe this is a message to whoever's listening, but knock on the doors. There are opportunities for you and my cohort, aging, you know, white males. Hey, get out there. Get in the game. And seek employment.
Well, you know, David, what's interesting into all of this, when we're having difficulty in filling jobs, you see people paying premium rates for entry-level positions because they can't get people to enter. Yet, at the same time, we're having this debate in Harrisburg of raising the minimum wage, which I think, you know, we have to think, we're not always going to have good times, right? We're going to have a continual business cycle with an ebb and flow. And while you've got the governors pushing for higher wages, the market is actually taking care of that in so many parts of our commonwealth because in order to attract people back into the workforce, you're going to have to pay a higher wage.
Absolutely. And, you know, this idea that the minimum wage is supposed to be a living wage,
yeah.
You know, it's the entry door. It's the opening. You know, when we were teenagers and we got that all-important first job, we weren't worth minimum wage.
Three and a quarter?
Yeah, there you go. You know, it was somebody.
Some might say I'm still worth only 3 1/4.
Somebody took a chance. You
That's
know,
right.
They let us in, and they did. They paid the minimum, and we got that all-important first experience. That's what the minimum wage is about. It's not about a family of four, you know, and that's kind of the narrative that's grown up. I think it's a false narrative.
Yeah.
I really do.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Gordon Denlinger from NFIB Pennsylvania and Matt Briette from Commonwealth Partners. A large number of those people who are not looking for work, who are of that that age population where, you know, they're adults, they should be working or looking for work, that I think that addiction is part of that. And, you know, one of the things that I have that PMA has been prominent on is talking about the dangers of expanded drug use, especially the legalization and mass commercialization of recreational marijuana. And looking here at the Keystone Business Climate Survey, you know, talking about this difficulty that employers are having finding new hires, applicants lack essential skills was the number one indicator at 58%. Overall, lack of applicants, not enough people in the pool of potential new hires, that was at not quite 37%, and you know, saying that applicants lacked even basic skills at 31% is pretty troubling. And even though this isn't the highest factor, failure to pass a drug test came in at not quite 17%. And for, you know, for manufacturing employers where we have workplaces with, you know, let's count them off: heavy equipment, bladed instruments, extreme temperatures, high voltage, chemical reactions. We have to have a safe workplace. All of our licenses and insurances and permits depend on us having a safe workplace, beyond, of course, the fact that it's just absolutely the right thing, the thing that we have to do to protect our incumbent workers who, as the survey reveals, are more important than ever, because if you lose people, if they go away, then it's going to be time-consuming and expensive to try to find people to replace them. The fact that we already have a noticeable problem where not quite 17% of respondents said the inability of new hires or applicants to successfully pass a drug test. If you have a problem already, the first thing you should do is not make it worse.
Well, let me give you an example, David. One of my members is in logistics, and he has warehouses where there's forklifts and the heavy equipment that you're talking about. And he's very concerned about what would happen, because this is a big push of Governor Wolf and Lieutenant Governor Fetterman, is to have recreational marijuana. And my friend Rob, who's a member, he said, Matt, I just had 10 guys randomly tested. 8 of them failed. Now, if we made recreational marijuana legal and we find, THC in their blood, this is a violation of company policy. But then if the state legalizes it, of course, the federal government has not.
Correct.
And he says, my insurance doesn't care what the state says. My liability doesn't go away. If a guy impales another coworker with the forklift, and he says, well, I wasn't high, but they test positive for THC. I mean, these are the concerns that I'm hearing from employers that may otherwise say, look, I'm pretty libertarian on this stuff. I think that people should be able to do things, that don't harm other people. But this is one of those examples where he says, I can't balance this in my insurance, the liability, and operating my business in a safe environment. I don't see how you balance that tension. And then I think at the end of the day, people say, really, of the 100 things that we need to be focused on in Pennsylvania, legalizing marijuana is, breaks that 100. I don't think so. We've got much bigger problems, the things that we were talking about before we even led to this.
I would say to Pennsylvania policymakers, before we rush headlong into something, let's see how it works out. You know, how does it impact the workforce? How does it impact driving habits and DUIs and the whole rest of it? Clearly, personal and societal impacts. And since we have some states that are going down this road, let's take a good hard look before we take a launch on it.
Well, because we know that it doesn't have the same kind of reaction or immediacy as, say, alcohol, which, of course, is the continual comparison. And so you've got some real challenges there to deal with. And as employers, we have to respect, the challenges that they're in. And if we throw them another curveball in an employment issues, that just sends the wrong message to the job creators in our Commonwealth.
And I want to get through, Gordon, I want to get through the rest of this information here in the time that we have left. And before I move on to the next thing, I just want to make one more point about the about the workforce issue, which is that Harrisburg has been focused on corrections reform, which I think is something else that needs to be considered, where, you know, this change in the economy also creates an opportunity to lift people up, and that for, you know, those people who have committed a crime but paid their debt to society, that the workforce needs them. Society, we need the contributions that they can make, you know, with their talents, with their skills. And so this is why, again, I want to see more progress in this area. And also, you know, this is why we need to make sure that these benefits go to our – these opportunities go to our countrymen, and that we don't blunt the positive opportunity here from having continued unrestricted, especially illegal immigration.
Absolutely. I think we're at a bipartisan moment on that issue, the opportunity to take a fresh look at incarceration, particularly for nonviolent offenses. Is it time to maybe make some adjustments there? You know, you don't want to get into the extremes. But at the end of the day, these are people who pay their price to society, come out the other end and need a pathway back.
And they're Americans. Yeah. They are our countrymen.
Yeah. Well, because we do know 90% of the people going in the front door of our corrections institutions are going to come back out into our communities. We want them to be as productive as possible, because it'd be horrible to say you are now a ward of the state in our corrections facility. We then make you a ward of the state in our welfare system because we didn't prepare you or give you what you needed to be a contributing member of society. So I think these are some of those good things that we do see happening when frequently we're not seeing all that good come out of Harrisburg or Washington.
Well, and again, all of this information on the Keystone Business Climate Survey is available online at lincolninstitute.org. A few more of the headline findings here. The right track, wrong track, that the right track is 60%, wrong track is 30%, which is still, you know, strongly positive, 2-1. It is slightly less strong than this time last year, where it was a 70 right track, 20 wrong track. Gordon, I know that you've got some other headline numbers there that we want to burn through.
We do. You know, as mentioned earlier, the general outlook is amazingly positive by small business owners and business owners in general. So some very good news on that front. The employment situation, folks are looking to add more employees per the survey, and that's encouraging in the months ahead and the upcoming time period. So yeah, generally, the Keystone Business Climate Survey is signaling good things for our future.
Outstanding. And as ever, we're grateful to our friends at Lincoln Institute. And again, all that's available at lincolninstitute.org. Sadly, that's all the time that we have for this program. Gordon, where can the listeners go to learn more about you and your organization and the things that you're doing?
David, they can find us at nfib.com/PA.
Excellent. And Matt, where can the listeners find you?
Go to thecommonwealthpartners.com.
Excellent. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. For Gordon and Matt, thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. A few weeks ago, on Election Day, I stood outside of my local fire hall, which serves as the polling location for our precinct, handing out poll cards for our slate of candidates. Mid-morning, an older gentleman showed up and posted a sign touting Fair Districts PA. He then proceeded to ask voters to sign a petition against gerrymandering. Gerrymandering is the drawing of congressional and/or legislative district lines to benefit one party over another. It is a process almost as old as the Republic itself, so named after Elbridge Gerry, who as governor of Massachusetts in 1812 signed into law a congressional redistricting plan that included one district which bore a striking resemblance to a salamander, thus giving birth to the term gerrymander. As are all subjective processes, gerrymandering is in the eye of the beholder. Over the decades, various court rulings have taken the edge off the most egregious abuses of the redistricting process, but to some degree, those with the power to draw district lines generally tilt the playing field a bit. After next year's census, the process of redistricting will begin anew. This constitutionally mandated exercise apportions congressional seats among the states, and then new districts are drawn within the states, taking into consideration the population shifts of the previous decade. Now, of course, most people, at least in theory, are opposed to gerrymandering. So the gentleman at my polls got a few signatures. He did, however, misrepresent the current process as unfair and touted a so-called fair alternative, which we will get to shortly. Is the current process fair? Let me answer that question with another question. Do you believe the process by which a bill becomes law is fair? Because that is exactly how congressional redistricting is accomplished in Penn's Woods. Congressional redistricting takes the form of a bill, which must be passed by both houses of the General Assembly and signed into law by the governor. That means 253 elected representatives of We the People, our state House and Senate members, vote on the bill. That occurs after the legislation is fully vetted through the committee process, including massive amounts of public input, then debated and voted on in legislative session before going to the governor's desk. The process is open, transparent, and constitutional. As we approach the 2021 redistricting, it is also politically balanced, as it is likely the General Assembly will be controlled by Republicans and a Democrat governor will be in office. In fact, in 2011, when the GOP controlled both the governor's office and the legislature, the congressional redistricting plan passed the legislature with strong bipartisan support. So-called Fair Districts PA proposes to ditch that process and replace it with an independent citizens commission, which would then draw the district lines. So unelected citizens, or at least those motivated to invest a considerable amount of time and effort, can apply to be on the commission. In a bow to identity politics, the applicants would then be weighted by racial, gender, and unspecified demographic diversity. The proposed change then vests in the Secretary of the Commonwealth, who is a political appointee, the power to select the final pool of candidates. Conveniently, the Secretary of the Commonwealth, who will be serving in 2021, when the next redistricting occurs, will be an appointee of, as the Huffington Post has described him, the most liberal governor in America, Democrat Tom Wolf. Further, the Fair Districts proposal would inject an element found in neither the U.S. nor Pennsylvania constitutions, political parties. The Citizens Commission would be mandated to include 4 Republican citizens, 4 Democrat citizens, and 3 citizens who are either unaffiliated or members of a minor political party. This lays bare the true goal of Fair Districts PA, a hijacking of the redistricting process to solidify the unconstitutional re-gerrymander of the districts implemented by Pennsylvania's rogue state Supreme Court in 2018. Just as the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, has turned out to be anything but affordable, Fair Districts PA has nothing to do with fairness and everything to do with changing the rules of the game to secure a partisan political advantage. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WIYQ AM and FM in Saxonburg, WWBE FM and WFYY FM in Selins Grove, along with WISL AM in Shamokin, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.